It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Love Erzik.
Talk the lot.
Okay. All right, a little countdown here. 3, 2, 1. Welcome into another episode of Pound for Pound. I'm Zach Cordova, alongside my incredible co-host, Mati Dembele. This week, we're going to be breaking down this weekend's incredible UFC 305 card that's going down in Perth, Australia. Dragos Du Plessis will be defending his championship belt against the returning contender, Israel Adesanya. And before we get to that main event, we got to go through the card. This is a very, very stacked main card, just tops to bottom, even prelims. Some notable names in there. One name that I've been talking about a lot recently, Luana Santos in the women's division, stepping in on short notice to fight Casey O'Neill. Also an exciting fight. But first of all, Mati, how are you doing on this Wednesday afternoon?
Zach, this card is ridiculous. UFC 305, I mean, like, we're ramping up the fight night after that. It's going to be really, really good. I mean, like, Dana's doing Dana things. The Contender Series, we were talking about it before we started recording. The first two fights were absolutely insane. So the fight world is in a very, very good place. I'm ready to get it rocking. I'm ready to get it rolling and talk some cage. I'm so pumped right now.
Oh, man. Speaking of those Contender Series fights last night, I mean, wow. It's back. You can't miss Tuesday nights. Dana always talks about this is his favorite time of the year. And it's for a reason, man. And we kicked the series or the season off with two back-to-back knockouts last night, but the first one of the night was incredible. Just any initial thoughts on that, on the first knockout last night?
I mean, his name is Lonaire?
Yeah.
Welcome Kevin to the party. I mean, like, oh my God. I was
a
never
flyweight, too.
A flyweight, guys, that small. You know, it's usually the smaller guys. I was never really a Contender Series kind of guy because I always loved the Ultimate Fighter, but you take time to watch it. And it's just all this for a $10,000. I will be a fan. I will be watching more and more as time goes on. It's insane.
Definitely. You get a bunch of guys in with one shot to make the UFC and one shot to impress Dana. It's kind of what you get. You always seem to get fireworks in those matchups because, as we saw last night, Rami Hamed in the co-main event last night, he won. But he didn't put on the most exciting fight, kept his distance, and played the smart game. And Dana ends up not giving him a contract because he says, hey, you didn't impress me. So that's exactly what you got to expect when you watch the Contender Series, is guys who are going out there to impress the boss and go out there and put on an incredible performance. So I think it's always not miss TV whenever the Contender Series is on. But moving on from that, we can't hold off for too long because this weekend is just it's going to be exciting. We're going to start off with the first matchup, Tai Tuivasa versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Forgive me if I butchered the name. I'm just going to call him Biggie Boy like everyone else calls him for the rest of the time we're here. But Tai Tuivasa returning, coming off of a loss in his last one. Rozenstruik coming off of a win against Gazeev. We got an interesting one down in Perth. We got two big sluggers who like to throw down, and I think that's what we're going to get in this main card opener. I'm excited for this one, Mati. What are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, Tai Tuivasa is a favorite here on the podcast. I mean, like, we just love his personality, his charisma that he brings. And he's a guy that can headline a card. I mean, like, it's been kind of the downward track so far, but Tai Tuivasa, I mean, he's a knockout artist. We all know about his record, 14-7 since he joined the UFC in October 2016. I believe then he had a perfect 6-0 record, and I believe all of them came way of knockout. You know his celebrations for the shoey. But this is a tough test here for him. Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I believe the name is Surinamese. I mean, he bounced, but he had five, if we're talking about Tuivasa again, he had a five straight knockout wins between October 2020 and February 2022. And before that, he was on a losing skid. So he kind of revived himself there. And he saw the fight against Ciryl Gane, who was ranked number one at the time. That was the fight of the night when they fought each other. But Tuivasa since then has lost three more fights by stoppage. His most recent loss was in March, to Tybura. I think it was a submission. I don't know how far you can go if you're tied to Tuivasa against a guy who's just a cleaner technical striker than you. I'm gonna go against the grain. I'm gonna say Rozenstruik, who also has a suspect chin, as you pointed out, Zach, before the show. But I just think he's a bit cleaner in the striking department. I think he's gonna be able to put down Big Tie, which I take no enjoyment in saying despite the smile.
Rozenstruik coming in, he's a guy with a very extensive history in kickboxing and a very accomplished guy in kickboxing. But I feel like we haven't necessarily seen all that in the UFC. He's had glimpses where he's shown that his technicalities in box in his striking, and it kind of leaves you wanting more from him. And I feel like that's where every time I watch Rozenstruik performances. Well, I feel like he could do more. All of the accolades say he could be better, but I feel like we haven't necessarily always seen it in the octagon. Maybe it's the takedown threat that is always just kind of looming over him. He had that fight against Almeida, which he got subbed pretty early on. And it seems like anytime he fights a guy where that takedown threat is imminent, he has a tough time getting his shots off. Well, this weekend, he doesn't have to worry about that because he's got another guy who's going to oblige in the striking. Somebody who loves to throw down, as Ty loves to say, loves to swing and bang.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what we're going to get this weekend. Now it just comes down to, I think, does Rozenstruik play that game with Tai Tuivasa? Does he join him in the center of the octagon and just wants to swing it out? Because I think if we get that, it's heavyweight. It's
Yeah.
whoever lands first. That's what these matchups are. It's just all both of these guys hit like a truck. Who's going to land first and who's going to land it clean? And man, I can never put the chips down against Tai Tuivasa. I just, especially in a matchup where that takedown threat isn't imminent, when he knows he could just go in there and swing and throw down, do what he does best. I don't think there's many guys in there who can stand in there with him. And that's like a very, not rare, but it's a certain group in heavyweight. You got Derek Lewis in that group.
Yeah.
Guys like that who can just go in there and just throw down and are ready to hit, and they just need to land once. Doesn't need to necessarily be the cleanest punch. Doesn't even need to be fully loaded, just got to land. And I think Tai Tuivasa this weekend finally gets his chance in Australia to show out in front of his home crowd. The electric, the atmosphere in there is going to be electric, and I think that's going to all play into Tai's favor. He needs this win. He's got a losing streak right now, and right more than anything needs a win. And I think he's got another guy who's going to throw down with him. I think Tai's going to bite down on that mouth guard and land that strike and put him out. Either way, this fight ends in a knockout. I think we can agree on that, right, buddy?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a great fight. And just to talk a little bit more about Rozenstruik, I mean, like, we remember when he was at the pinnacle of it, when he took on, I believe it was it Ngannou, who was ranked like number two at the time? And Rozenstruik was like 5-6 at this time. But he was on top of the world because he had that big Overeem victory there. And he struggled since then, going 4-4. His most recent fight was a win against Gaziev. In the main event, I believe that was a TKO. One surprising thing, we talk about the division where it's a bunch of guys just slugging each other. Rozenstruik doesn't get tagged like that. 2.78 strikes per minute, guys are able to land on him. So it's not much. And you would think he's a stationary target. And again, that combined with the fact that he's so clean in the hitting department, I don't know. I think it's tough for Ty. I love Ty. With my heart, I'm saying Ty, but my brain is telling Rozenstruik.
I understand that because Rozenstruik is a guy who we talk about the kickboxing accolades and stuff. He's a good at his
Very good.
striking defense, especially when he's not worrying about a takedown. Then he could really just focus on the striking. But I just think that, I mean, two suspect gas tanks, I feel like, in this fight. I don't think we go over maybe a round and a half in this one. But like I'm telling you, man, Ty needs a win. And I think down there in Australia this weekend, the building is going to be on fire, especially when Ty comes out to, I can't wait to hear what he walks out to. I always love a Ty Tuivasa walkout song. But man, I just can't go against him this weekend. I think he's hungry. He needs this win more than anything. And I think he's going to go in there with the do or die mentality. He's going to go in there and swing and hopefully put down Rozenstruik. So exciting fight to start off the main card. We're going to move on to the next card, which is going to be Matheus Gamrot taking on the returning Dan Hooker. And man, this is a tough one, Marty, because Dan Hooker looked really, really good against Jalen Turner a year ago, but it was a year ago. It's a little bit of a layoff, and he did break his arm in that fight. However, he went head-to-head with one of the toughest guys in that lightweight division, the tallest guy in that lightweight division, a guy who's been an absolute menace to take care of on the feet. And Dan Hooker just seemed to walk right through the fire and go in. I guess maybe not necessarily walk through it. He didn't come out without a scratch, a couple of them, especially the broken arm. But he beats Jalen Turner, one of the best strikers in this division, one of the hardest puzzles to solve because of the length. And he's getting Matheus Gamrot, who is not the same size as Jalen Turner. This time, Dan Hooker is going to have a 5-inch reach advantage, and he's also going to have a height advantage. So I think that Dan Hooker coming into this has some momentum, even though it was a year ago. He has that confidence coming off of a very, very tough win against Jalen Turner. And he's just one of the toughest guys in the sport. And I think that outlasting Matheus Gamrot is an option for him this weekend. And I think this fight's also going to be fireworks, just following up that Ty Tuivasa fight.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. Dan Hooker, what I would describe his renaissance, I guess, I think it's a rebuilding phase. I think that's the most fair assessment of it. A longtime lightweight contender. I mean, always right there, hangman, as they call him. Bounced back from consecutive losses to Islam and Arnold Allen by beating Claudio Puelles and Jalen Turner, as you outlined there. It's really grit with this guy. I mean, a broken arm, a fractured orbital bone to defeat a Jalen Turner who's 6'3", 6'4", really shouldn't be in that division, but just towers over the division. And I don't know, for that, it just restored so much faith in me. Like, he's a fighter's fighter. I love everything about Dan Hooker. Gamrot is no joke. You see just his physique and his size there. I mean, I don't know. Dan Hooker is such a violent guy. I'll say this. I'll take Dan Hooker for this fight. What I'm scared of most is Gamrot's ridiculous takedown attempts. Like he, that's always a threat that's going to be there. And
it's tough to call because
it is tough.
And here's the thing about what people bring up is MMA math. Well, both of these guys have both beaten Jalen Turner. They both beat Jalen Turner by split decision, which is another interesting thing. So I think this weekend comes down to, can Dan Hooker defend the takedowns? We've seen him do it in the past. We've seen him be incredibly well-rounded. He almost submitted Jalen Turner in that fight at the end of the second round. So he's shown off a little bit of submission game that he can get to it if he needs to get to it. But when it comes to the ground, if it gets there,
yeah,
Gamrot definitely does have the advantage there.
Yeah. And Gamrot is a real contender in this division. A lot of people counting him out, or as I imagine, they don't think of him as that big-time contender in that division. I know he has a loss to Beneil Dariush. That was like 2-3 years ago going back now. But it's his only shortcoming in 8 fights across 3 years. Because Islam Makhachev is about to fight Armin Saryukin. You know who beat Armin Saryukin? Metu is Gamrot. I mean, like, he's one of those guys who are right there. And a win against Dan Hooker would surely put him in that conversation. But I got to go Dan Hooker. Like, he's just a violent guy. Like, by any means necessary, by hook or by crook. I love his fight style, and he's always right there. It's no joke when you step in with Dan Hooker.
Incredibly motivated, I think, also, and he's just ready. He's trying to get back into that top five of lightweight, and it's not going to be hard against Matheus Gamrot, but I think if anybody can outlast Matheus Gamrot, if anyone has the chin to do it, anybody who has the toughness to do it, it's Dan Hooker. And I think, again, in that arena, in that atmosphere, fighting on his side of the world, definitely plays a little bit of an advantage to him. It doesn't necessarily, there's no one else who's going to be in the cage with him who can help him, but I definitely do think it plays a little into Dan Hooker's favor, especially in this kind of resurgence now in his career. I feel like we've seen a new form of Dan Hooker. He's kind of turned the corner, and I think he's really improved in his last two, and that fight against Shannon Turner just convinced me that Dan Hooker's back. And I think that while this is a very, very tough matchup this weekend, I think Dan Hooker could do it. I think he could pull it off, and it would be an upset, but I don't think it would shock me if he did it. But
an upset? Okay. I don't know about an upset. Sure, we'll
roll. He is a plus 265 underdog,
which is crazy. Which is crazy. The odds should be much closer.
I agree, but with Gamrot's kind of track record and some of the names he's beaten on his resume, it's hard not to say that Gamrot is not one of the toughest fights in the division. And a lot of people, like you say, counted him out after that loss to Benil Dariush, but he's another guy who's just always there at the top of the leaderboard, top of the echelon of the lightweight division. But like I said, Dan Hooker's resurgence lately has convinced me that he is back, and I think he could get it done with a gritty performance this weekend. So me and Marty both in agreement on this one. And moving on to the co-main event of the evening, a flyweight co-main event of the evening, which we don't see very often. The little guy is getting the shine. But Kai Carl France is going to be back in action after coming off of a loss from Brandon Moreno last year. And Steve Ercik is also back, coming off of a loss for the title earlier this year. Two guys who pack a lot of power for this flyweight division, something you don't see very often. Very clean, very crisp strikers. And that's what you see. That's what you expect when you get to the light flyweight division. When you get to the lower division, anything below 155, speed and precision. And these two guys are some of the best in the world at. Steve Ercik, still kind of a newcomer to the UFC. Hard to say that he's a newcomer after he gets the title shot and has a very – I actually thought he put on a very good performance against Pantoja. Even though he loses a unanimous decision, he looked like he belonged. And that was his fourth fight now in the UFC. And if anyone isn't convinced now that after that performance that Steve Ercik does not belong at the top of this division, you got to be blind, because the guy is tough. He deserves to be up there. But he's getting a very game Kai Carl France this weekend, who, for being a 125er, hits like a truck. We saw the way he put down Cody No Love Garbrandt. We've seen the way he's put down some of his other opponents in the past. He's a great, clean striker, another city kickboxing guy. And we've seen three city kickboxing guys on this card. A lot to expect from those guys coming in there. Marty, how do you see this matchup?
Well, I have to give my apologies first off to one Steve Ercik. The last time we talked about him, I believe it was in a fight with, was it Figueiredo? Was it the Figgy fight? I forget.
Last fight was for the belt against Pantoja.
Against Pantoja.
Yeah, in May.
In May, yes. And I counted him out because I didn't think he was special enough. Like, he was ranked number 10 or 11 at the time.
Three fights in the UFC before that, too.
Three fights in the UFC, and you saw how he sparked some of his opponents prior to that. But I just didn't think he was special enough. Like, you remember Anderson Silva, who first came on the scene, and he got a title shot like this because he was so special. And Steve Ercik, he just didn't strike me as that guy. But again, I wasn't.
He's not the most intimidating looking guy either.
He's not the most intimidating. Maybe the magnetism of Steve Ercik is not there. But again, I love the way he performed against one Alexander Pantoja, unanimous loss. But you saw the way that he fought there. Another big fight here against Kai Carl France, right? He's taken some losses in the UFC. He's also taken some wins, but Kai Carl France hits like a Mack truck. I mean, like, I can't stop thinking about his fight against Elias Garcia. They won fight of the night in that decision. And Kai Carl France had the decision. He got the decision there. He lost to Brandon Moreno. Like, these are guys that are like at the top of the division. Kai Carl France is one of those guys who are constantly there with them. Give me Steve Ercik. Give me Steve Ercik. Again, I think he's a bit of the cleaner boxer. And again, when it comes to two guys who both have power like that, I'm looking for the guy who could set it up better and who could set it up in a more efficient manner. So the guy that I counted out before, Steve Ercik, I'm going to take him for this fight. And he's ranked number 7 now. So I think with this win, I think he goes into the top 5.
I think one of the funniest things about Steve Ercik is the comparison. So I don't know why I'm blanking on the name now. The main guy from The Office.
Oh,
You know what I'm talking about?
Jim Halpert, yeah.
No, not even Jim Halpert.
White? Oh, Mike.
No, is it
Mike.
Mike?
Yeah. Keep
Yeah.
going.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name all of a sudden. Looks every time I see him, especially in like watching all of the UFC videos they put out
Yeah.
this weekend, he always kind of looks like he's in a scene from The Office. I
Yeah.
don't know what it is,
Regular guy.
but that's the fun thing about him is he plays that kind of character, almost just kind of innocent. Hey, I'm just here to compete kind of guy. But when he's in the octagon, he's a killer. He's a
He is.
beast. That was a gritty performance against Pantoja, a guy who drags guys in the deep waters. And Usyk was there for all 5 rounds, and he hung
Okay.
with him. He didn't look like he didn't belong. And Kai Kara France, again, I need to correct myself now because I said his last fight's coming off of a loss from Moreno. He's actually coming off another loss from
Yeah.
Albazi. So
Yeah.
he's on a two-fight skid heading into this fight. And he has way more experience in the UFC than Usyk, way more experience in terms of a pro fighter. However, Steve Usyk, I think, is still yet to realize that he hasn't had anybody who has really ruined his confidence. I don't think coming off of
Yeah.
that Pantoja fight, his confidence is shaken at all, because
Paralysis.
if anything, it's only gone up, because that is a very tough fight, as we mentioned, against one of the toughest guys in all of the UFC. Pantoja is just goes through wars over and over and over again. And Usyk being able to go through that and being able to go through 5 rounds and compete with Pantoja, I think he's just only proven to himself that he belongs to the top of this division. And I think this weekend he could really get it done.
And to add on to that, Kai Kara France, I think it would be a completely different story because I think that's an excellent point. That's the best point we made so far. I don't think he hasn't been humbled yet. So he's crazy and no one can tell Steve Ursig anything as of right now. He hasn't been humbled yet. Kai Kara France could have been the one to do it, but remember, he was scheduled to fight Manel Cape, I believe, back in September. And you remember the whole incident? I believe that was Strickland Duplessis, if I'm not mistaken. Or Strickland, was that the Strickland Izzy?
It was
That
Strickland Adesanya fight,
was
yeah.
Strickland Adesanya. And he caught the concussion. So this is a guy who's also coming off of ring rust. He has ring rust. And so this is perfect for Steve Ursake. This is another big name who hasn't been in the ring, and you can really elevate yourself. So it's all gravy, and you're playing with house money if you're Steve Ursake.
Usyk has been incredibly active in his past 2 years. I think three fights in 2023. This is going to be his third fight this year. He's active and he's got momentum, and I like that going into this weekend. Like you said, nobody has been able to disprove that he belongs in that top five, and I think this weekend he finally breaks through. I mean, he got the title shot. He's coming off the title shot loss, but you can't really question that he belongs in that top five now. And all he needs is the number next to his name, and I think he's coming up against a skidding Kai Kara France. I think he's able to get it done. He's going to be the hometown boy here in Australia, even though Kai Kara France is from the same side of the world. This is Usyk's home. This is his place. And I think he's going to show out in front of the Australian crowd. So, both of us, Usyk this weekend. Perfect. Well, moving on to the main event of the evening. Man, I'm excited for this one. I'm nervous for this one as well because everyone knows I'm an Adesanya fan. But you got to look at this straightforward. You got to look at this one without bias. And this one makes me nervous for Izzy because Dricus is a guy who's
Tricky.
packs unbelievable power, and he's just unorthodox. He's a tough puzzle to figure out because he's so unorthodox. He's gotten to the top because he kind of do everything. He's just a bruiser. He's a finisher, and he goes forward and he walks through shots that a lot of other people can't walk through. But I think that changes when you fight an Israel Adesanya who's as pinpoint accurate as an Israel Adesanya. And we've talked about it now over the past couple months, the kind of aura around a contender Izzy, what that means for Israel Adesanya when he's coming back off of a loss, when he's coming for the belt, when he's no longer the champion defending, when he's hungry. And the
Exactly.
question this weekend for me is, how hungry is Izzy? How much does he really have left in the tank? Because he's 35 now, he's coming off of a loss. He's come off of shaky past 2 years. He loses to Alex Pereira, comes back, knocks him out, is on top of the world once again, and then loses a very, very, everyone thought it was a gimme against Sean Strickland, and he looked, quite frankly, he looked terrible. He didn't look like the Israel Adesanya that we know. He couldn't get anything to land, couldn't get any of his shots off, and just looked a step behind. He takes a year off now, and he returns against Dricus du Plessis, a guy who he does not like, and du Plessis does not like him because of the whole du Plessis kind of discrediting the Three Kings era, yeah, saying that, hey, I'm going to be the real African champion. None of you guys are real African champs. I'm going to be the real African champion. That really, really struck a nerve with Israel Adesanya, Kamaru Usman, and Francis Ngannou. And Izzy, I think, is coming in with that fire behind him this weekend because he wants this one more than anything. And I think that's the biggest thing for Israel Adesanya, is having that motivation to come in, having that fire behind him. And that's what's made a contender Izzy so dangerous. So, I mean, man, what, this is a tough one to kind of predict, though. So what are you thinking, Marty?
What I will say to that point, Zach, before I get into my whole soliloquy, is you always say on this podcast, it's hard to get out of bed with silk sheets, right? Or silk pajamas is the term in boxing. Like, when a guy has it all and when he's already achieved everything, even when he falls from grace, he may lose that. But Israel Adesanya, I mean, like, I don't know if you watch his documentary. He's just a different type of guy, which is saying a lot for a fighter. The fact that he's already so different for people that are already so different. I mean, like, he has the heart, and he has the crazy, like, he has the craziness of a guy whose entire life he's been fighting. So contender Izzy, and I wasn't ready to see, and you convinced me, contender Izzy is going to be very, very fun. To Dricus's credit. I mean, welcome to the party. Like, I was a disbeliever. Me and Andrew, right before the Whitaker fight, we're like, he's going to get destroyed. But there's a method to everyone's madness. And Dricus du Plessis, he's a tricky puzzle. It's not sloppy. I don't even think it's fair to call it sloppy anymore. It's tricky at this point. You think it's messy from the outset, the way it looks, it's not aesthetically pleasing. It's not beautiful, but it gets the job done. And he packs a punch. Yes, he does. I remember Israel Adesanya talking about him and Dricus sparring back all the way back in 2014, and Kai Car of France was in the room. He said that Dricus had him in the grappling, but in the striking, he messed him up. So I pretty much think that's going to be the tale of this tape. I think if Israel Adesanya is able to control it and keep his distance with his striking, I don't think Dricus has a chance. But one thing about Dricus du Plessis, like I said, the method to his madness, it gets really, really weird in there for him. If he's able to catch Izzy, which is something that I don't even want to say, but I do think it's fair because Sean Strickland caught Izzy clean, in fact. So I do think that Dricus is able to do the same. And if he's able to get him to the ground, it could be a very, very long night for one Israel Adesanya. But his striking department, I mean, like, there's very, very few strikers that are just as good as him. Conor McGregor in his prime, like, he's on a very short list. So I think he'll be able to control the fight with his striking, and I think he will be able to reclaim his strap at 185 pounds again.
And Israel Adesanya this weekend will have the opportunity to become one of three fighters to ever win a belt three times, one of those fighters being John Jones.
Exactly.
So some history could be made for Israel Adesanya. However, he's already said, I don't care about the belt. I just want to fight. I want to fight Dricus. I want to fight everyone who's a beast in this division. It doesn't matter who has the belt. It doesn't matter if I have the belt. I just want to fight everybody who's at the top. And, I mean, coming in to take on Dricus du Plessis, he's proven he's had a tough road to this title now. And some people argue that he lost to Sean Strickland. I'm kind of one of them. But he did prove that one of the biggest concerns going in was the gas tank.
Yeah.
He went for five rounds, and he looked good while doing it. He beat Robert Whittaker, which was an absolute shock to the whole world. So you talk about the style being like, you don't want to call it sloppy. I think the way that I call it is controlled chaos. And I think that's one of the things that some guys are just really good at. You got guys like Justin Gaethje who just learn how to live in the fire. And that's what Dricus du Plessis does. That's where he thrives, is being in the pocket, taking shots, taking one to give one sometimes. And that's, I don't think that's necessarily the right pattern, though. You need to go against fighting in Israel Adesanya because he's a guy who is just accurate. When you fight Sean Strickland, it's more volume over accuracy and knockout punches. Izzy can find your chin and he could put you down. And I think that's where Dricus can get caught, especially in this fight early on, if he doesn't get be careful, because that's exactly the trap that Izzy put Pereira in, is lure him in, let him think that he could tee off, not without, like, in other words, not having a respect for the power coming back. And that's the thing that got Pereira caught, was he didn't have respect for the power coming back from Israel Adesanya. Put himself in the pocket and decided to start teeing off, and that's where he got caught. And that's where Dricus needs to be careful in this fight, because if he doesn't get, if he gets too far into the pocket and he's not careful, Izzy could put him down. So this is kind of one that goes back and forth. Again, can he take Izzy down? Izzy, over the years, has proven he is a very, very tough guy to take down. And when he goes down, he doesn't go down for long. Usually he's able to get up pretty quickly and get back to his feet and get back to his game plan.
Very underrated takedown defense for Israel Adesanya.
Definitely. So it's, that's what it comes down to me, is can Dricus take him down? And if he takes him down, can he hold him there? Because when you go to the striking department, I think Izzy has him beat. Izzy has him beat by, I almost want to say, leaps and bounds because of the ability to find a precise shot, to find the chin. Dricus is just a little bit more sloppy. Sean Strickland's able to put Israel Adesanya down because he's beating him to the punch a lot of the times. He's deflecting shots, parrying, and landing straight shots. That's what Sean Strickland does. But Dricus du Plessis doesn't really have a straight shot. He has looping shots. He throws hard. And that's where I think he gets caught. And that's why, for me, I got to go with Israel Adesanya this weekend, man. I got to pick Izzy, coming back contender Izzy, taking the belt back.
Yeah.
And just righting a wrong that happened last year.
The battle for Africa ends here. It's a fight that should have happened some time ago. Better late than never. Better now than never. Israel Adesanya will be middleweight champion again.
Well, we're in agreement. And, man, I'm nervous. But, again, excited. This is good, the fight, man, we've been waiting for so long. Some bad blood in the main event. I feel like we haven't seen a main event with some bad blood in it in a long time. And I think this is one where the two guys genuinely don't like each other. Yeah. So I think that, man, either way, we are going to get fireworks. This whole card down in Perth, the Australian crowd, always, always a blast when they're down there. So cannot wait for this weekend. But that'll do it for our episode this week of Pound for Pound. I've been Zach Cordova alongside Mahdi Dembele. Don't miss UFC 305 going down this weekend, Perth, Australia. It's normal viewing time for the U.S. No early start. Early start if you are in Australia, but U.S., we get normal viewing time, so don't miss that. But that'll do it for this week. Thank you for tuning in. Hope everyone has a great week and weekend, and enjoy watching these fights. I'm pumped. We'll see you next time.